Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 10th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 10th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie, and tonight we're going to do a little bit of a discussion on the state of American higher education in colleges and universities. Just some administrative things first. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat. And to call into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. I had a notice from my computer that a flash crashed as I was speaking, so I had to reload it. I think the chat is functioning again. And the switchboard is functioning, so I'm going to continue with the show. I thought I would do a show on higher education because of two news stories that were very prominent in the past week and a half. One of them was the collapse of the rape case, very well-publicized rape case at the University of Virginia involving a fraternity that was described by an article in Rolling Stone magazine and caused quite a stir when it was published late last year. Further investigation has shown that the sources were very dubious, and eventually Rolling Stone had to retract the article that was written by Sabrina Rubin Erdely. And the fraternity, which was portrayed in a very bad light as having countenanced and tolerated sexual assault on its premises, is suing the magazine. And when this story came out, there was a rush to judgment on the part of many in the academic community, basically saying that there's something wrong with the university and the fraternity culture, and they were hostile to women, so on and so forth, no due diligence was done as far as the veracity of the actual story. The second news episode was the decision by the University of Michigan to cancel a showing of American Sniper on campus, the movie about the Navy SEAL, Chris Kyle, because a number of students said it was culturally insensitive, portrayed Muslims in a bad light, was too glorified war too much, et cetera, et cetera. And the university canceled the showing, but then there was an outcry on the opposing side, and a very prominent figure in the university, a former football star, now coach, Jim Harbaugh, really took the university to task, and his pressure, along with the pressure of a lot of other people, made the university do a U-turn, and the university agreed to cancel the cancellation and show the film, also showing an alternative film for people who objected to American Sniper. So two very interesting stories about political correctness on campus. So I thought it's probably an opportune time to look at what's going on American college campuses. Why have they become such havens of political correctness and groupthink? And I'm going to do a little retrospective. I'm going to draw a little bit on my own experiences from college and go back in time a little bit. So when I entered college, that was in 1970, and the big college movie at the time was a romance called Love Story, a very famous movie, which a very lush romantic story, although it has one of the stupidest closings, I think, in motion picture history, where the Ryan O'Neal character comes out with this phrase, "Love means never having to say you're sorry," which bizarre statement shows a very immature understanding of love and of human nature. But anyway, it's a fascinating, watching the movie now, it's a fascinating story, portrayal of a time that's quite different than our own time. So I'm going to play a few bars of the Love Story theme, so just sort of set the mood, I should say. As I scroll through my rather confusing switchboard. The movie, I think, does a very accurate portrayal of the social environment that existed at the time. The movie takes place at Harvard, and circa 1970, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant establishment was still very dominant at Harvard, although it was increasingly being challenged by the rising Catholic and Jewish middle classes who were breaking down the barriers of entry to get into the Ivy League. Harvard was politically liberal, but socially quite conservative compared to the attitudes of on campus today. My own college experience was at Georgetown, which I started to attend in 1970, and although Georgetown is a Catholic school, pretty up there in terms of status, it cost $4,000 annually to go to Georgetown in the early 1970s. That room, board, tuition expenses, which meant that for the middle class, it was still relatively quite affordable to go to a private college. Now, if you fast forward 20 years, what would be a good musical theme song for the Academy? And it's not the lush romanticism of Love Story. It's something quite different. So here's my take on what a song that would characterize today's Academy. In contrast to the relative social conservatism of the university environment in the early 1970s, and I, you know, I have to use that word advisedly. It's relatively conservative. The colleges were liberal politically, especially when it came to economics, but many social conservative norms were still quite firmly in place. But then in the ensuing two or three decades, a steady accelerating process of politicization took place, and also an explosion in the cost of going to college, especially private college. Georgetown University today costs $64,000 a year for a student, room, board, tuition, expenses, compared to $4,000 when I went there. So that is that it's 16 times more expensive to go to college, a college like that now, than it was back 40 years ago. Now, obviously, a lot of students are going with some kind of financial assistance. But I looked at the statistics for that particular school, and only half of the student body is receiving financial assistance, which means the other half is paying the full freight. And that is a huge economic burden on the middle class. The modern college campus is dominated today by speech codes and political correctness. And in contrast to the relative conservatism of 40 years ago, all sorts of things are the rage now which were barely even heard of 40 years ago. Multiculturalism, gay issues, feminism, stuff like that are the dominant ideology on the college campus of today. And so the question that should suggest itself to conservatives or independently minded people is, how did this all happen? And for me, one of the best explanations of this trend came from the author Camille Paglia, herself an academic, herself a liberal Democrat, a feminist, and quite a bit of an iconoclast. And in reading her work, and I have read a lot of it, she described the evolution of the humanities in the 80s and 90s and the rise to prominence in the academic thinking of the time of French theorists pushing this notion of structuralism. And one of the key principles of structuralism is that there is no such thing as an objective reality. Language drives our perception and interpretation of the world around us. The structuralists were also fascinated with power, who exercises power in social structures. And they came up with the notion that if you can control the language, the medium in which discussion takes place about the power structure, you can control the power structure. And if you control the power structure, you can reshape society to conform to one's values and ideals. Now, once you go down this slippery slope, you have set the stage to politicize everything, because there is no such thing as objective empirical reality. And Camille Paglia did a lot of interesting writing about attitudes on campus to various things. And one of the things I remember very well was this application of structuralist thinking to feminism and its interpretation as to how women were being exploited. So the feminists would attack the fashion industry, accusing it of, quote, raping, unquote, women. And so if a woman appeared in, you know, very stylish, expensive clothing, that was tantamount to rape by, you know, the patriarchy or whatever. If you saw a woman in a turtleneck, some of the feminists said that was decapitation. I mean, it was just absolutely bizarre. And in her writing, she went into great detail about how this way of thinking seeped into the humanity faculties of all the elite colleges and then many of the non-elite ones too, and how it just changed the whole university environment. So I thought I would go into a few clips of Camille Paglia describing the evolution of the university environment. But before I do that, I want to just check Switchboard in chat. I did have somebody in Switchboard in chat a while ago, but they left. The chat crashed, though. So one of those nights on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, so I have the clip up. I'm going to play several selections from this. Camille Paglia was being interviewed by Reason Magazine, Nick Gillespie. And so let's go into a couple of these clips and hear what she has to say.
Authentic leftist, okay, had a job at a university in the 70s or 80s or 90s, should have been opposing the entire evolution, okay, of the university, okay, that is for this administrative bureaucracy that has totally robbed power from the faculty, okay. The total speciousness and fraud of academic leftists is proved by the passivity of these people in every department of the university to that power play that happened. Now, my first job at Bennington, we rose. In 1976, we rose. The faculty, okay, voted, no confidence in the president, into fight back against the board. Okay, we rejected the power of the board. Okay, where has there ever been after
here's
such uprising?
Two questions. One is that I actually think you're right that universities travel on their faculty and the faculty, various studies have shown that there has not been a growth in the number of faculty, certainly not a tenure-track faculty, but the big growth in employment in universities
and salaries.
If you went to college up through about the mid-80s, and certainly from the late 60s through about the mid-80s, there was no in loco parentis. There were fewer and fewer required courses. It was a kind of temporary autonomous zone.
Right.
Then it started getting ratcheted down, and now when you hear about the student experience, it's about required courses, and it's about making people think certain things or not express certain things. And it's so much of the focus of undergraduate education is to be kind of indoctrinating people into the proper ways of thinking. How does that play into this passivity on the part of the faculty? I mean, is it that the faculty wants to see that happen and so they're happy to have bureaucrats run things?
All I can say is that, once again, that the people who went into teaching, who went to graduate school, are just followers, they're sheep. As far as I'm concerned, okay? Let me just say something about the in loco parentis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I arrived in college, I think it's before, the in loco parentis was operative. I was in a girl's dorm. We had a sign in at 11 o'clock at night. The boys could run free. They had panty raids. We'd like to throw water at them, out the windows and so on. My generation of women rose up and said, get out, okay, of our private lines. And the university said, no, the world is dangerous. We must protect you against rape, against attack, all those things. And we said, give us freedom.
Give us freedom
to risk rape. That is the true freedom.
Isn't it true, though, that what they were trying to restrain was not rape, but rather your sexual appetite?
Well, I think that they believed they were asking for the parents. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was their obligation to protect. And so now...
Okay. So we see here a theme that is very critical in understanding the modern university, the growth in administration. Administrative staff have grown much faster than faculty staff, and their salary and expenses have really driven up the cost of going to college. And since they're not involved in teaching, they're increasingly involved in meddling, in social control and in thought control. And this theme is going to be fleshed out further in the interview. Camille Paglia was describing how back in the 60s and 70s, as women were seeking emancipation, they wanted to discard a lot of the paternalism with which they were being treated. And then an odd phenomenon occurred. Things evolved where they reverted back to wanting protection by authority figures. So the next part of this interview will go into that.
Everything, and that, this is why I went so much against the grain of contemporary feminism. And when I started, when I wrote about the date rape, hysteria, okay, and I wrote this inflammatory piece in for Newsday, 1991. I'm still being persecuted about it everywhere. People are so angry about it. And it, basically, what I said was, free women must take personal responsibility for their own sex lives, okay? And they keep authority figures out of
your sex
lives.
And to be clear, in no way is this sanctioning sexual violence. What you're talking about are cases where people retroactively reclassify something, a regrettable sexual experience that they would rather have not consented to.
I'm talking about date rape, okay, which is what everyone is talking about right now, okay, about the so-called rape culture, okay?
Right.
That essay that I wrote begins, rape is an outrage that cannot be tolerated in any civilized society. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this new reclassification, okay, of people getting drunk, going on a date, going to fraternity houses, and women not taking responsibility for their own behavior, okay? I said, gay men, for thousands of years, have been going out and having sex with strangers everywhere. They know they can be beaten up. They know they can be killed, okay? What is this? The women are like, oh, we must be protected against even our foolish choices, okay? It's up to men to... This is ridiculous. This is an intrusion, okay, into the civil liberties of young people to have this kind of vampiric parent figures in the administrators hovering over, watching, supervising people's sex lives. In Europe, there's nothing like this. Okay, there's no idea that the University of Paris is concerned about the dating lives of the damn students.
Well, they don't have sports teams and they don't have dorms.
Right, exactly.
Right, so. Okay.
It's a residential college thing. Okay, this vision of college as summer camp, as Club Med. This is the folly
of American education.
But
it's more re-education camp. Right?
Let us give you the incredible gym with the exercise equipment. Let's give you the 1,000 choices in the cafeteria. I mean, this has nothing to do with education anymore. Okay? Male education, okay, is being committed from coast to coast in the United States.
Talk a little bit about Madonna.
Okay. So she continues with that clip about the reversion of feminists from their push for independence back to a reliance on authority figures who will coddle and protect them. And she also goes into the evolution of college as a, I guess, what would you would call it, as a purveyor of residential real estate services. So she characterizes it as college as summer camp, Club Med, a safe, coddling environment and a fortress that protects against hurt feelings. And, of course, if you have that notion that you have to deliver that package of services, which was certainly not the case when I went to college, I mean, the services that colleges provided students were rather primitive compared to what they do today, what is that going to do to costs? Well, it's going to make them explode because you have to provide the amenities themselves, and then you have to have this growth in administration and management to supervise and provide and police and administer all of that. So you have this dual phenomenon occurring where the colleges are becoming very controlling, especially concerning the social and intellectual lives of their student bodies, and they're also becoming prohibitively expensive. And in the last clip that I'm going to play, she just goes into a critique of what the net impact of all of this has been.
Okay, very powerful. And so now we're in a period, I mean, this is what I don't understand, okay, where we have some of this, where now, you know, the women on campus, the whining, institutionalized whining now, okay, about it. That's what it's turned into.
Well, here, clarify, what's the difference between a legitimate gripe and whining?
Well, Well, it's my point of view, okay? No college administration, ever, okay, in the social life of the students. None, okay? If a crime is committed on campus, it should always have been reported to the police. Okay? I absolutely do not agree by any committee investigating any charge of sexual assault. Okay, either it's a real crime or it's not a real crime. Get the hell out, okay, and so on. So you get this expansion of the campus bureaucracy, okay, with this it's absolutely Stalinist, okay, oversight in micro and the students have been raised with helicopter parents. They want it. The students of today, okay, they're utterly unformed. Okay, not necessarily in my school, the art school. I'm talking about the elite school.
So those kids over at that school.
It's the grade grubbers.
Yeah.
It's the grade grubbers, the bright overachievers. I'm not at that kind of school, okay? I'm at a school of arts and communication, okay, where people already have a vocational trend, okay? To be admitted here, you have to already have a vocational aptitude, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the Ivy League. Now, I've encountered these graduates, okay, of Harvard, Yale, University of Pennsylvania, Princeton. I encountered them in the media, okay? And people in their 30s now, some of them, okay? Their minds are like jello. They know nothing. They have nothing trained in history. They have absolutely no structure to their minds. Their emotions are unfixed, okay? The banality of contemporary cultural criticism, okay, of academe, okay, the absolute collapse, okay, of any kind of intellectual discourse in the U.S. is the result of these colleges, okay, which should have been the best, okay, that have produced the finest minds, instead of having retracted into caretaking. The whole thing is about approved social positions and a kind of misty love of humanity, okay, without any direct knowledge, okay, of history or economics or anthropology.
Okay, well, sometimes I think Camille Paglia would do better in her public speaking to take a Valium or two because she goes so fast and she makes such good points, but it's very hard to follow her at times because her thought processes are so rapid, it's hard to keep up with her. Well, anyway, she points out the overwhelming characteristic of today's college environment, which is the institutionalized whining. Students who were raised by what she calls helicopter parents, and that's a phrase I've heard quite a bit in the past few years. And my generation, the baby boom generation, they created that phenomenon. They were, they pioneered the whole style of helicopter parenting, where the parents just surrounded the kids all through their childhood and adolescence with protective structures. And when the kids go off to college, both the parents and the kids seem to want this expanded administrative class to rush in and fill the vacuum once the students left the parental, that all-encompassing parental orbit. So the administrative class is just obsessed with things to protect the students against. The uncertainties of social life and dating and relations with the opposite sex and ideas that disturb their sensibilities, the whole phenomenon of political correctness. The students have to just be exposed to nothing but correct thinking so that their fragile minds are not disturbed. And that is the product that is coming out of today's academy. So what does that mean for Republicans, conservatives, independents, pretty much anybody who is not in lockstep with the progressive agenda? In my view, I think we are delusional if we think that we can engage the academy and its allies, the left wing of the Democratic Party, a lot of the media class, certain pieces of Wall Street or the high-tech industries or the professions. These people live in an alternative reality where they really believe that they can define reality by just controlling discourse and language because that's the way that they were taught to think. and they are impervious to empirical arguments. So it's kind of, in my view, it's a waste of time to really engage too much with this type of person in social media. You know, the endless flame wars that go on Facebook or on Twitter or wherever. We have to channel our energies into practical action, and that means reaching people who are not part of the bubble and persuading them to vote, because only repeated victories at the ballot box can restore a proper balance to society and rein this out-of-control academic-slash-intellectual-slash-progressive class in. As far as the expenses, of going to college today, I am increasingly inclined to think that only price controls are going to be the answer to what is, in effect, a cartel that has been ratcheting up the price of college degrees in a really shameless way at the expense of the middle class. And since so much higher education is dependent on federal funding, I think voters have a right to insist that colleges control their prices and cap them, and to reduce their costs and to reduce their overhead to make college more affordable. And to introduce more and more competition into the business of the academy, so that maybe less politicized schools can rise with better cost structures and compete for students and not subject them to the amount of social control and indoctrination that goes on in the mainstream academy, especially at the Ivy League. At the Ivy League schools. So in closing, I would say what we need to insist upon as voters, as citizens, and as a society is to curb the excesses of the academy, to curb its spiraling cost structure, to curb its appetite to form cartel-like structures, and to curb its efforts at thought control, because we shouldn't have to walk on broken glass, as the song goes, in order to get a higher education and repress our own beliefs and instincts just to run this academic gauntlet and fork over all this money to a bunch of people that really fundamentally does not like America or the American middle class. So I'm all for stopping a lifestyle of walking on broken glass. And with that, I'm going to conclude this broadcast. Hope you've enjoyed it and have a great weekend. And we'll be back probably in a couple of weeks to talk about the British election coming up, and then also the opening stages of the presidential election. Have a wonderful evening. Night.